market.
The S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that is brought to you by Andrew, Scott, Liam, and Frank.
Frank.
Frankly, we're talking about Frank, my friend. Dividend franking in particular.
Yeah, Frank.
It's gotten a little bit of headlines this week.
A little bit.
Courtesy of Mr. Shorten, so we have to talk about that.
We talked about when politicians attacked last week and Bill's come out a week too late, but he gets an honourable mention.
Always keeps things interesting. Let's so we can really talk about that for the whole show, but we won't. We're going to squeeze in some other things.
Sakes, yes.
In fact, just as we were preparing to go to air, a bit of a bombshell dropped. Wesfarmers is getting rid of Coles.
We are breaking news here.
We are absolutely breaking
How
news.
Good's that?
So we had a very quick skim, and let's hope we get most of the details correct. We've got some great questions as always. So we're going to go through a few mailbags, and my friend, it's your turn to get on the high horse.
Awesome.
And I'm looking forward to that.
Mate, you don't sound too bad for a bloke who's hungover.
I had a bit of a big night last night. As did you.
I did.
As did all of our colleagues, in fact.
We
had a bit
did.
Of a get-together.
The Motley Fool team was down in Sydney.
Bit of barefoot bowls.
Bit of barefoot bowls. How'd you go?
We won.
So did our team.
Mate, I'm undefeated 2-for-2 on that, just quietly.
Yes, there were listeners. Andrew likes to refer to himself when he's barefoot and bowling as the A-train.
The A-train. Toot toot.
Complete with, yes, toots, which is, you know.
I don't even know where it comes from or what reference that is, but let's just go with it. Anyway, somehow I'm going to try and bring us back to dividend.
Give us a really good segue. We can cut out this bit and we can just go straight to it. Ready? Here we go.
Let's
and
do that.
Go.
As you said, we're a little bit foggy this morning. let's start at the beginning. What is dividend franking or imputation as it's otherwise known?
Imputation credits, exactly. So the idea introduced by the Keating government, or at least Paul Keating as Treasurer in the Hawke government, way back in the 90s, was the concept that Australians shouldn't have to pay taxes twice on dividend income.
It prevents double taxation.
So if you earn money in interest or you earn rent from an investment, you pay tax when that money is received by you and your suite.
Sure.
With dividends, before the system was introduced, the company would pay tax on their profits.
Mm-hmm.
They'd give you the money in terms of dividends, and the government would say, well, you've just got some income, you've got to pay us tax on that. Now, you're paying tax on money that's already had tax paid on it.
Yes.
So back in the 90s, the Keating Treasurership or government said, no, we're not going to allow that. We're not going to have that. We'll give you a credit for the tax the company's paid already.
Yep. 35% at the time.
Correct.
So 30% now.
The idea of imputation or franking credits is you're given an allowance at tax time for the tax the company's already paid on that dividend.
Yes. And it's a wonderful system. In fact, I think it's only us, the Kiwis, and maybe one other country in the entire world that actually does this.
Yeah. And it's super smart, right? Because there is no logical sense why dividend income should be taxed twice when interest or rent or any other sort of investment income is only taxed once.
Yes, it makes a hell of a lot of sense. Also, you would think it. Apparently, Bill doesn't like it though. So he's proposed. So where it gets a bit interesting, and the change here is not to the whole system, but in fact, the Howard government made a bit of a tweak to the rule after Keating brought it in, which was there are some people who pay less than the 30% rate of corporate tax.
Yes,
and if you don't have any other income to offset those franking credits off against, you actually get to cash them in. You actually get to say, I've paid too much tax.
The ATO will send you a check and say, you haven't actually paid any tax, but here's a tax refund.
Here's a tax refund.
Right.
Because you have, the company has paid too much tax on your behalf.
Right, and that's the key point. So this week we've had a whole lot of people come out. Bill Shorten, we don't get political here, but I feel pretty good about attacking both sides of politics when they deserve it. So Bill Shorten's come out with something I think is frankly not very well thought through.
No.
At some level, and they're talking about $5.8 or $8 billion worth of money here for the budget. So it's a big, big pot of cash.
Mm.
And Shorten has basically said anyone who gets a refund no longer deserves it, no longer gets it, the money's not coming back to you.
Mm.
And I kind of get that at one level. The challenge that we have is that right now it doesn't allow for the fact that the taxpayers themselves under the tax scales themselves, aren't required to pay tax.
Mm.
So if you're in a zero tax bracket, you pay no tax on your interest.
Mm.
You pay no tax on your rent.
Rental income.
But for some reason, the government says you still have to pay tax on the company profits that are earned for your portion of the company ownership. So if you own a couple of Woolworths shares, you got to pay tax on those dividends. You don't get that back.
Mm.
And that's the hard part.
Keating is the father of all of this, and he actually came out in support of it.
Yeah.
So where's, again, for us, it doesn't seem to make that much sense. But one argument I've heard, which I have some sympathy towards, is there's a bit of a distortion in the system. The distortion being is that it for some For many people, the value of a dividend is greater than the value of the cash retained by the business. So it gives a added incentive for the board to distribute cash rather than retain it. Now, a lot of people say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, if you're a business and your goal is to maximize return for shareholders,
yep,
and you've got opportunities, you know, high probability, low risk opportunities to reinvest that cash and get a good return on
right,
that,
yeah,
shouldn't you do that instead of paying? We see this more in Australia than other countries. I'm the dividend guy, right? I love dividends. I get it. But,
yeah, for sure.
You know, I get really annoyed when especially when you see companies with good, very well articulated, well prosecuted growth strategies with a long runway ahead.
Mm-hmm.
They're borrowing money, they're raising capital through issuing shares, and they're paying a dividend, which
yep,
kind of seems that there's something's amiss there, right?
Now, I kind of have some sympathy for that view, although that's more about the franking system in general.
Right.
That's the fact that the franking system as it exists incentivizes shareholders to want dividends rather than capital growth because of the tax treatment. So that's, if you pay $100,000 in tax and you get 20 grand worth of franking credits to reduce that tax, that exists no matter whether you get a proper refund or just a reduction in the tax you pay. So I get the kind of the conceptual argument on that, but that's not about this current week's conversation about the refunds. This is Bill Shorten saying, if you're eligible for a refund, if as a government or as an opposition, but in government, we have said your tax rate is 0%, you actually have to pay more than 0% if you own shares in a company.
So you're saying,
and that's where it's broken.
If you wanted to fix something,
yep,
assuming that we all agree something needs to be fixed,
right,
start with the tax scales themselves,
correct,
not with the actual quirk of the franking system.
Right, so you treat all income the same. So the first thing is, do we think double taxation is bad? Yes.
Yep.
Do we think that income should be treated the same,
mm-hmm,
i.e. you should only pay tax once on all your income? Yes.
Yep.
And do we think the personal tax scales should be determinant of how much tax you pay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
If you believe those three things, the dividend refund ban that Shorten's going to introduce or is planning to introduce is madness because it doesn't hold true to any of those three rules. And this is the big problem. So if the government says I should pay zero tax, then why should my dividends be taxed before I get them? I'm not paying zero tax. And so there is a distortion there. My rent income is 0%.
Yeah.
My savings income is 0%. But my shares are taxed at 30% at the corporate level. So I've actually been disadvantaged by owning shares and not getting that money back, not paying 0%. Now, as you said, I think the retirement savings system is fundamentally broken because we have large swathes of, say, Woolworths, a lot of owned by retail investors, a lot of those owned by retirees or people in superannuation. It's possible that 25% of Woolworths Inc., corporate tax isn't taxed at all, or profit, sorry, isn't taxed at all because the 25% of people own it who are retail investors in the SMSFs or in retirement phase are in zero tax. And you can't have a tax system that works that way. So I would change it. I think they're much more, I have sympathy for Frank for Shorten's view. His view is there are people getting tax refunds of $80,000. Now, if you're getting that much in, do you deserve 80 grand at a zero tax rate? No, you don't. And this is where it starts, right? So people who are on the pension, people who are getting low amounts of income from super in their retirement should be on 0% for that small, you know, first 40, 50, 60 grand. The bit that replicates or replaces the pension should absolutely be tax-free.
Well, that's why there was the tax incentive.
That's why it's there in the first place.
Yep.
After that, though, as you earn more income, you should have a tax scale applied to you. It makes no sense that
I'm retired, but I've got a $50 million portfolio, so I shouldn't have to pay to kind of.
And you know, maybe it's not 50 million, maybe it's 10 million, right? But if you're getting.
I'm only 10 million. Okay.
Right. But if you're getting $500,000 a year in dividends, that shouldn't be tax free. Like, no one thinks it's a good idea for a $500,000 income a year to be tax free.
Yep.
And that's where the problem exists now. That's an extreme example because there's other rules that overlap that.
Sure,
but.
Sure.
Yeah, apply the personal tax scales, not banning franking refunds. That's the bottom line.
Oh, man.
And we should thank, by the way, Andrew and Dale, who both hit us up on Twitter and said, hey, guys, can you talk about it this week? So thanks, guys, for the suggestion. We're going to anyway, but it's always nice to know what they
want
to talk
about. Look, we might
follow
that up as well, because this is ongoing. It looks as though they might be backtracking a little bit, maybe a bit of a political misstep.
So far they've said, we won't do it to pensioners.
I can't let this one go either, mate. I love Sean when quizzed on it. He said, you know, people who are going to miss out should just invest in property.
Go and buy property.
Going like, what?
Because that's cheap.
Yeah,
Australian property is, what, the fourth most expensive in the world? And Bill Shorten's like, it was even worse. Australian property is a good bet.
Yeah, I was going to say a good bet. Yeah, like,
seriously?
There's multiple things wrong with that. It's one, good. Two, bet. I was like, I don't know.
I won't blame you. I'm all for tax reform. I'm all for fixing the system. it is not sustainable paying 0% tax on all retirement income. You just can't do it at any level.
Yeah.
So fix the tax scales, Bill. Leave refunds alone.
Very good, my friend. Very good.
Thank you, sir.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's talk about Wesfarmers.
Yeah.
Now, Wesfarmers, a very, very old Australian company. It's an investment conglomerate. They have their, as in the nature of conglomerates, they have fingers in a whole bunch of different pies, industrial chemicals, coal mines, Kmart.
It's got to make it hard to work, mate.
What do you mean?
If you had apple pie over your hands.
That's terrible. I'll forgive you because you're a little bit hungover.
Don't blame me. I'm not hungover. I'm sleep deprived, but I'm not hungover. Thank you, my friend. Don't try and drag me down to your level.
So, and they bought, when did they buy Coles again? Remind me. A while ago now.
Yeah, it was probably almost. Was it 10
we
years
should
ago?
Really know. This is how much preparation
we'll
let
this
do.
Bit out of the out of
so,
program.
But and you know what? Full credit to them.
I just don't want a podcast. You don't ask me a question you don't know the answer to.
That's
all right.
I definitely don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer to.
So they bought back in the day. Coles was really struggling. It had suffered from years and years and years of underinvestment. Woolies was just taking them to task, and Wesfarmers bought them out and just reinvigorated that business.
2007 it was.
2007.
Thanks to the wonders of Google.
Wow.
We do all our best work.
Wow. I was going to say further back, but okay. So they really turned that thing around really quickly. And now they've said, just this morning, just before we've come to air, they said, actually, we're going to divest ourselves of that. So firstly, my question is, what is a divestment? And the second question is, why would you do that?
All right. So the great thing I love about Wesfarmers, Wesfarmers is an active recommendation of ours at Share Advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about Wesfarmers relative to Woolies, and I like both businesses as businesses, but Wesfarmers is an investment company first and a retailer second.
Yep.
And their view is that we will put our shareholders' money to work in the best investment opportunities we can find.
Mm-hmm.
And when those opportunities no longer make sense, we'll sell those businesses, divest the businesses, do whatever with those businesses. Mm-hmm. And so they've, you know, if you buy Wesfarmers, you're buying an investment management layer, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you buy Woolworths, Woolworths is Woolworths. Mm-hmm. And so Woolies can't sell Woolies and still be Woolies, right?
Right.
Wesfarmers, though, isn't, I mean, these days it's predominantly a retailer because that's what they've done in the past.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to remain a retailer. So put that aside. The reason they can do this is they will demerge or divest themselves of Coles by spinning it off into an ASX-listed company. So Coles was ASX-listed once upon a time.
Yep.
Wesfarmers bought it, fixed it. Now, effectively, they're putting it back on the market by giving 80% odd of the shares to Wesfarmers shareholders so they can then hold, sell, or buy more of.
My question, though, for you is why divest and split it off and give shareholders a pro-rated, you know, equivalent shareholding in the new company? Why not just sell it, get the cash, and then do what you do as an investment conglomerate?
So a couple of things. We should probably just tidy up the terms a little bit. Mm-hmm. To divest is just to get rid of your interest in, which they could do with any of those things. They could sell it, they could demerge, they could do a whole lot of things.
Right.
This is more accurately a demerger, which is where they simply split the business in half. It's not a big deal, but important to get our terms right.
Yep.
And so thinking about how that happens, we don't know their specific reasoning. My best guess is that they're doing what Woolies themselves actually with a property portfolio a few years back, which is to say, trying to sell Coles and get a decent price on the market in a large lump sum. This is a multi-billion dollar business.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any buyers out there who would buy Coles from them.
Okay.
So selling it to a trade buyer, selling it to private equity, probably just not going to happen.
Mm.
So they've figured the best way they can get value for their shareholders is to list it separately, let the market work out what it's worth, price it accordingly, and then their shareholders can decide whether they want to keep that interest and own some of Coles or sell it and put the money back into Wesfarmers or something else. Again, it's like Woolworths did with their property portfolio. They said, we can't convince anyone to buy this property portfolio at a decent price, but we can spin it off into the market, and then individual investors can make their decisions about when they buy or sell based on their interpretation of a fair price.
Do they also feel as though they get greater value? Is it a case of, you know, if I take two and I split it into two different parts, I get one and one and a half?
Look, it's possible. It depends. We don't really yet know how the market will value Coles as a standalone business.
Because shareholders are worse off otherwise, right? Other than giving them the choice.
Well, they get both, so they're no worse off. Because if you have, what's our favourite analogy, Andrew?
I don't know.
It's round, has pepperoni on it.
Oh, it's pizza.
Let's go with the pizza. So let's say you got a whole pizza, right?
Yeah.
Wesfarmers is the whole pizza.
Yeah.
What they're saying is we're going to cut the pizza into thirds and we're going to give one third of that pizza, I'm going to put one third on one plate and keep the other two thirds on the other plate.
Mm-hmm.
The pizza doesn't change shape or size. I just have put
it
in two
different parts. What if the patron at the pizzeria says, actually, that third of a pizza isn't actually a third of a pizza. I actually only value that as if it was a quarter of a pizza.
And that's always possible. This is where we pretend. We don't pretend.
Really going to get messy with our analogies here.
Right. But... Well, the market pretends that it's efficient, right? And, mm-hmm. and academics pretend the market is efficient. Mm-hmm. If that was true, the market should value this business as a whole exactly the same as the sum of its parts. By definition, the mm-hmm. math should work, right? Mm-hmm. If I've got two halves of a pizza, whether they're separate or together, it's still one pizza. That mm-hmm. They don't change size just because I slice them up. Mm. It's possible the market says, well, we think Wesfarmers and Coal separately is worth more or less than together. Mm. But that's an example of market inefficiency, not any sort of corporate decision-making on Wesfarmers' behalf. So right. simply saying, I'm going to cut the pizza up, and rather than give you one whole pizza, I'm giving you two separate plates mm-hmm. with two different bits of the pizza, mm-hmm. there should be no impact on the company itself, and the value is determined by the market. And mm-hmm. it gives, again, the shareholders the opportunity. If they demerge Coles and the share price falls and you think it's good value, you can buy more Coles shares. Mm-hmm. That's a benefit. Mm-hmm. If the market values Coles more highly, you can sell those Coles shares and then buy Wesfarmers or do something else with the money. So they are letting the market decide, but more importantly, their shareholders decide, rather than recognising one-off value on whatever terms they can get. Their considered view, and frankly, I trust Wesfarmers' management and board, their considered view is they think that there's more value in listing it than trying to sell it for what otherwise would probably be a lower price.
What percentage of their earnings was from Coles? It was like half or something, I want to say. It was a huge amount, this is going to be a much smaller business after the fact. We're talking specifically Wesfarmers here.
Yep. So they're spinning out the Coles convenience. So
they're keeping Coles Bunnings, food, that's right.
So they're keeping Bunnings, they're keeping Officeworks, they're keeping Target and Kmart. Mm. And part of this, again, they're keeping Target and Kmart because no one will buy it, right? They can't spin it out as part of Coles because people won't buy the shares.
Yes.
They can't find anyone to buy them, so they're kind of stuck with them for now.
Yep.
That won't be the case forever, I don't think. Bunnings, Officeworks, spectacularly great businesses. Yep. So Bunnings say that, and I think there's some value here. We talk about demergers all the time and acquisitions and other things. Wesfarmers believe that the market will value these two businesses, or consider these businesses differently. Coles is now, they're saying, a moderate growth business. Mm-hmm. And their argument is, look, as a Wesfarmers operation, we think we can use our money for higher growth opportunities. Mm-hmm. But there are some shareholders who want lower growth, stable, probably higher dividends, say, from Coles.
Yeah.
Same reason, would you buy Wesfarmers or Woolworths, or would you buy, I don't know, Cochlear? Mm-hmm. Very different businesses, right? Depending on what you want. Do you want income? Do you want dividends? Do you want capital growth? You know, depending on what you want from a stock, you'll buy different companies. Their view is that Wesfarmers and Coles separately is an easier investment decision for their shareholders than the whole thing together as one conglomerate, particularly now the growth is slowing down.
All right, nice one.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
We better move on, my friend.
We should.
We've got a bunch of questions. We've got some really good ones.
You want to ask me to create a new term for something? Last week went really well. You asked me, and
the opposite of a correction.
What did I say?
I'm not repeating it. I am not.
There is nothing wrong with the word upperection. I will stand by that word. The fact you laugh like a schoolboy is not my problem.
Giggle like a schoolgirl.
I'm a visionary, and so that's my thing. we did have a couple of our listeners. Thank you for responding on Twitter, guys. If you don't want to respond on Twitter, by the way, we are at The Motley Fool AU. Or I'm at TMF Scott P. And Andrew is at?
At @Sage_Simeon.
So we did have some people who contacted us, and one poor listener, we probably are up for some IT costs. Apparently spat coffee all over his keyboard and computer. After hearing my coining of a new term, which I think will catch on, I'm pretty confident. Come on, look, what are your previous?
I tried to get the Trump dump going, right. Turned out to be a Trump pump, and neither caught on. So,
okay. And then there was Boncano. You mentioned a couple of weeks ago.
I didn't
ago.
Coin the term Boncano.
You did try.
I did see a bandwagon, and I jumped the hell on that bandwagon.
How'd that go for you?
Hasn't worked out so well.
I saw a bandwagon too, and I jumped in front of the wheels, and I'm probably getting ridden over backwards and forwards as we speak. Though if it catches on, you heard it here first.
Okay,
well, I'm claiming that one.
Okay. It's all yours.
So your job for next week, Andrew, is to come up with a term to describe something in finance.
Okay. Mission accepted.
Liam, we have to hold Andrew to that. That's his job.
Okay.
If he doesn't come up with something, there's got to be some sort of penalty. We're kind of in the Triple M studios, Liam, so I'm thinking some sort of radio game show. Maybe we film Andrew getting an eyebrow shaved if he doesn't do it. Something like that. Can you guys organise that here at Triple M?
You want a classic radio stunt.
Radio stunt, exactly.
Beautiful. What are you thinking?
Oh,
look, there's numerous things. We can take one of his prized possessions and drop it off the top of the the building.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Have it dangling there during the recording of the podcast.
There you go.
And if he fails, we drop it.
Gone.
Oh, man.
That's an option.
You know,
I mean, which one's your least favourite child?
No, look,
we can have an array of, you can take an article of clothing every time, off every time, you know, you fail.
That punishes us more than the listeners, though.
Yeah, probably. This is not a filmed piece, so yeah.
That's just more painful for us.
I'm way too hungover for any kind of witty on that. So I'm just
Leave the jokes to me.
Okay.
The good thing about being in this audience is that between you and I, when you're hungover, I'm the funny one, and that works for me.
I'm going to go with that. I need to give a special shout out to Justine as well, who I'm told listens to the podcast on the drive back from work on a Friday. Hello, Justine. Thanks for listening in.
Absolutely.
We had a huge mailbag. We had a huge one.
I'll take the first one, Andrew.
My spot on the run sheet.
Do you know the way he calls it a run sheet, Liam? Like it's actually kind of a thing? He's heard that on radio. Obviously, someone's mentioned run sheet at one point.
Hashtag.
Yeah. Protein. Most radio professionals are actually always hungover, so.
I've got so much to learn.
There we go. So Conrad did just say we talked about a Bitcoin and you generally give me grief about Bitcoin, Andrew, and my usual response in jest is, well, I can't sell anyway. And Conrad did ask us to make the point that you actually can find ways to sell Bitcoin, and he said thanks for making that clarification. So Conrad, our pleasure. Thank you for listening and thank you for corresponding.
Keep going.
You still can't find your spot.
I still can't find where I'm.
All right. Next one's from JC on Twitter, who is JDC underscore, is that 1981?
1991.
Jeez, I'm aging myself. JC says, hi, guys. I have a question for the podcast. My wife and I are expecting our first child. Congratulations, JC. And I'm looking at setting up an investment for our child. A friend mentioned that I should investigate insurance bonds, but I have no idea what they are or how they differ from a normal government bond. Could you please explain what they are and how they can be used for your kids?
I should have really been the one to read out the question because
Andrew, you go
I'm with JC here. I have no idea what an insurance bond is. Are they even a thing in Australia?
They really are. Look, you know, we can't give personal investment advice, which we tend to say. Here's the thing. Insurance bonds are kind of an old thing. The idea with an insurance bond, it is tax advantaged. So there are tax benefits to having an insurance bond.
Okay.
You put money in, they mature at a certain time. They have been used traditionally to basically have a time-bound investment.
Sounds like a term deposit.
It kind of is, but it's an insurance bond, so it's tax.
Where's the insurance part come into it?
It's
just
the old,
by name.
It's the old. Back in the day, there was a thing called life assurance, which actually paid you out a return at some point in the future, whether you died or not. So it was a sense of it. The old style insurance bonds are largely just savings schemes, regular savings schemes, dressed up in a particular structure.
Okay.
So it's kind of it's equivalent of a term deposit where you'd regularly deposit some money.
I'm with you.
And it matures at, say, the time the kid turns 21, something like that.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, look, it does. And it's not the world's worst idea. The tax advantage. Look, you know, Australians love to save money on tax. And we
are so crazy when it comes to tax. Well, that's going to be my high horse next week.
All right. I won't steal that. Other than to say, insurance bonds have their place. They are a very conservative investment. They are tax advantaged. If you want to save money on tax, then that's an option. I frankly believe that if you're saving JC for your first child, let's say you want to give them money when they're 21 or 25, you're much, much better off, generally speaking, if history is any guide, just investing in high-quality shares and letting those compound for you.
Even if it's just an index fund, right?
Right, there are tax advantages in that in itself.
Yeah.
You can reinvest the dividends. The capital growth will look after itself. I understand why people would recommend them because everyone likes to save a few dollars in tax.
Is it generally true that the interest on them, given the particular environment we're in at the moment, pretty ordinary as well?
You pay no tax. That's what people focus on. But yeah, I expect over 20 years you'll do much, much better on average over time being in shares and trying to buy an insurance bond, as attractive as they seem. And look, you know what? People make money selling these bonds, which is why they're all being marketed to you.
There's a snout in a trough somewhere.
You know it. So look, JC, there's nothing wrong with it. If you want to do it, you feel good about it. If that works for you, then go for it. If you can otherwise, though, continually to, you know, invest regularly in your child's portfolio over a number of years, I'm pretty sure you'll do better investing in shares.
I just have to say very quickly too, your job as a rational human being, is to maximize your after-tax income. It is not to try and feel as though you've got one over on the tax man.
Yeah, this isn't next week, right?
Sorry, I just can't help myself. I've had a number of people I've had complain because I made money on these shares. Now I have to pay tax. It just blows my mind.
Liam, anyway, you fell asleep while I was talking. He's woken up and thought, it's next week. I better do my rant. I'm half tipping that's what happened just then, just quietly.
We got a good question from Valkmia. Oh, man, I can't even read at this stage. V-A-L... K-M-I-R-E. Yes. Apologies for that.
Drop me a one on Twitter.
Yes, thanks for the question. Hi there, really enjoy the podcast. Is it a good idea to buy?
So I really enjoy the podcast.
Yes,
that's pretty impressive. Emphasize
that.
Hey, do you know what? I'm gonna completely hijack your point here. We're going for time. We're all right.
We're okay.
We were the number one podcast in business last week. Thank you to all of our listeners who downloaded,
really?
And referred their friends. You did all those wonderful things.
I should have sounded so surprised. What?
You should have sounded surprised because I sent you the image of the iTunes chart showing it's number one.
Man, I live in the moment. If it happened more than 5 minutes ago, it just didn't happen as far as I'm concerned.
Liam, Andrew this morning over brekkie, as we were, this is a massive tangent. We're preparing over brekkie this morning. Andrew says
we don't
me,
need to share this.
Andrew says to me, you know what I'm thinking? We could do this thing. I'm like, mate, I suggested that to you a week ago. Don't suggest it back to me and think it's your idea. Literally, he's like, what if we did this? I'm like, mate, I said we should do that. That's what I said.
Allegedly. I'm still not convinced that actually
you
happened.
Know it's true, dude. You fessed up very quickly.
So Valpnia says...
So number one podcast in business.
Is it a good idea to buy a stock right after the dividend payable date? Since the stock price tends to drop by the amount of the dividends that were paid out, any help would be appreciated. So I'm going to unpack it. Thank you. I'm going to unpack this one. So companies that pay a dividend have to nominate a date at which you become eligible for that dividend. People are buying and selling shares.
If you own shares on this date, you get the dividend.
Yep. And so there's three dates that you need to be... Well, there's really two dates you need to be aware of, but there are three dates that are quoted. The first is called...
Remember, this is radio.
Ex-dividend. Do you want me to do some long division on radio?
I'm just suggesting you just... Keep it light.
That's okay.
Plus you're hungover, so the chance you get through this is probably...
Can you say, jump in at any point if I lose my way. So there's the first one is the ex-dividend date.
Yes.
Now, that is the date at which you are your entitlement is X. It's gone. So is that Latin? I don't know. Here's the thing, though. If the ex-dividend date was... Today's a Friday. If it was a Friday, you have to have owned the shares by the close of trade yesterday.
You have to have bought the shares by the close
of trade. Correct.
Yes.
Then there is the record date, which is the date at which that is recorded with the share register.
Yes.
Now, that really doesn't matter. As long as you have bought your shares before the X date, you are entitled to the dividend.
Yes.
And then the question is in relation to the payable date, which is actually the date it arrives in your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, well, that's a nice date to know, but it is the X date that matters.
Right.
So that's the first one. You have to own it at that point. Now, he's, or she, is very correct in saying that the share price will tend to drop. So if the share is a dollar and is a 10-cent dividend, generally speaking, all else being equal, the shares will drop to 90 cents the day after.
Right.
Because, quite simply, on the day before the X date, I'm getting a share and I'm getting entitlement to a 10-cent dividend. The day after, I'm just getting the share.
Right.
So the idea that you can buy the share on the day before the X dividend date, sell it a few days later, and get a free kick is not one that you can tend to do.
Correct.
There is also...
And also trying to buy before selling after the dividend is if you're going to get the same price. Some people say, well, I'll buy it for the dividend, then sell it after and bank the dividend. The shares are going to drop by the value of the dividend, so there's no free lunch.
And look, and just without getting too far down the rabbit hole, there's this thing called the 45-day rule as well, which means that if you own more than $5,000 worth of franking credits each year, I think it's $5,000, it's about that amount, you have to hold the shares for 45 days to be entitled to that. You can't buy and sell within that period.
Yep.
So generally speaking, unfortunately, there's a lot of clever-sounding strategies, dividend stripping strategies out there where people sort of advocate for this kind of thing. There's
people
just,
who can make a buck by selling you the strategy, right?
Look, there's just no free lunch in these things. So I would discourage you from trying to do any of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Shares are just so volatile and unpredictable in the short term. It's not going to land the way you think it will, not 99% of the time. All you need to remember is that if you want the next dividend, make sure you buy before the X date.
Yeah. So let me just quickly wrap that up because you asked about the dividend.
I unpacked it. You're wrapping it up.
There we go.
How's that?
I'll put a bow on it for you. How's that?
Lovely.
I'm a nice bloke. It's really important to get this right. So the dividend payable date, there is no entitlement on the payable date. So just because the dividend's being paid tomorrow, if you buy the shares today hoping to get the money tomorrow, you're not going to get it. The company has decided that the dividend would be given to you tomorrow, but only if you own the shares to your point, Andrew, on the ex-dividend date. So ignore the dividend payable date. If you own the shares, that's great to know because that's when you get the cash.
That's when you can spend
it. But you can't buy the shares anywhere near around the payable date or the payment date, whatever you want to call it. Mm. because you're just simply not going to get the dividend. You must own it on the record date, which means you must have bought the shares or held them before the ex-dividend date. The ex-dividend date is the date that matters. But again, even then, don't buy them just for that reason, as Andrew's saying.
Oh, yeah, look, a quick pro tip here as well, and I mention it because it often comes up on our boards. There is no requirement for a company to pay a dividend. So right. We might have paid dividends for the last 100 years. There's no requirement that it does next year. And the date that it paid it last year doesn't necessarily have to be the date it does this year as well.
So yes, whenever, that's also true. Yeah,
so it's a very easy mistake. So well, last year it was the, and you know, this is what you'll see on your broker platform. They paid it on the 13th, so that's what it's going to be this year.
Good
it's
call.
Not necessarily the same. It's very easy to check. Just go to the ASX, have a look at the company announcements. Mm-hmm. They will announce when that ex-dividend date is, and then you will know for sure.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, we've got a couple more questions. Let's hold them over to next week because I really am on your side with this.
Oh,
with this high
time.
Horse. So there he is. My headphone volume is way too loud.
There we go. Wait for the whinny, dude.
There we go.
It's a pregnant pause. The whinny is always important.
Okay.
You doing all right? You're almost there, mate. Stick with us.
What's your high horse?
This week, I saw the article I hate most. And when I say the article I hate most in the present tense, that's because I hated it most every single bloody time it's been published ever.
And it gets published
in the history of the world. Headline, buy and hold is dead. I you know what I love about these rants is when I have to actually stop myself, I have to bring myself back a little bit
a
so I can actually talk, right? Rather than just the exasperated thing that you do so well.
We're doing your radio stunts. I need to hook you up to an ECG or something like that.
Watch
the blood pressure rise. And
how
the
are we going?
Kick.
The ego's gone straight. We're number one on the podcast chart last week. Now we've got radio stunts. We're getting a little bit carried away here, aren't we? But I like the idea of putting some of your positions outside. That's kind of fun.
No, let's move past that.
So here's the thing. Buy and hold is not dead. Buy and hold has never been dead. But those who have a vested interest in saying it is, because they maybe have managed your money, maybe they are your stockbroker who want you to trade more. So the sense that all of a sudden, after a century of history, buy and hold no longer works is just absolute proven bullshit, if you can excuse the French. It's been the case for the returns on the stock market over a century are about 10% a year, give or take.
Mm.
That's not 10% a year every year.
Mm.
But if you simply bought the index and held it, you've got $1 squillion today.
Yeah.
The idea that all of a sudden, after a century of history, it stopped, A, would be stupid in the first place.
Mm.
B, we've been around, you and I, around the block enough times. It happened 3 years ago and 5 years ago and 8 years ago and 12 years ago.
Mm.
Someone was publishing the headline, buy and hold is dead.
Mm.
The only thing that's I don't like about the internet is it only goes back to about 1995 because I got to go back even further to find the newspapers where in 1983 they were saying buy and hold is dead. 1972 they said buy and hold is dead. The entire concept that somehow the market is changing incontrovertibly is, as I said, already stupid. The fact that it's been promised for the last 45 years and still hasn't happened is absolute evidence that this is a completely stupid headline. It's out there for a bit of headline. It gets a headline, right? So why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
It's done by an asset manager, a fund manager, a stockbroker, someone who's interested to make
culprits.
A trade.
Yeah.
Just go on.
Save
me from myself.
Save
our listeners from me.
No. Well, I agree. I totally agree. I will say, I think, and people will rightly say, you know, Scott, you prattle on about this all the time.
They wouldn't say prattle. They say you talk intelligently about it. You share your wisdom with us on this topic. They probably say.
You espouse this from time to time.
I cover in great detail the sensible arguments about it.
And they'll say, well, yeah, but I'm a member of your service and you just issued, four sell recommendations in the last month. I mean, that is seemingly a little bit inconsistent, isn't it?
Buy and hold is dead.
You're saying that buy and hold is not dead, but I want you to sell these shares. Explain yourself, sir.
Easy. If you simply buy and hold the index, you will be a squillionaire, and that is the first thing most investors should do. Buy an index fund, the Vanguard Australian ASX 200 index fund, the Vanguard International Developed Markets index fund.
Mm-hmm.
Sit on that, add some money regularly, you'll make a fortune, absolute fortune, by doing nothing other than buying and holding that index.
Okay.
If you're going to buy individual shares, and that's what we do at our services, mm-hmm. we've had to, because stupid people say stuff like you've just said, not that you're stupid, Andrew, you're an intelligent and capable bloke, but people say, aha, you say buy and hold, but then you go and sell, therefore it's ridiculous.
Mm.
People love to try and find fault, right? And so we've had to kind of...
So do we, by the way. Well, people in glass houses.
You like to find fault.
You just had it. Anyway, go on.
So we've had to somehow, because of the stupidity of that, say, well, okay, let's call it buy to hold. In other words, we buy with the intention of holding for the longest possible time until such time as our thesis is broken.
Yeah.
Right. And that's also true. So we would never say about almost any company, buy the shares, put them in the bottom drawer, never ever look at them or think about them again. There's probably a handful of companies you could do that with.
Yeah.
Berkshire Hathaway in the US, maybe Sol Pats here. Mm-hmm. There's some I feel would feel really good about that. But generally speaking, either buy the index and hold that or buy to hold.
Mm-hmm.
As an approach, buy and hold is the intent.
I'm buying
the
share with the intention of holding this for many years, and I'm doing it because I've got this expectation that X, Y, and Z are true. It turns out, and this is going to happen to you a lot, by the way, as an investor, that you're going to be wrong from time to time.
Oh, not me. Everyone except for you, other people will sometimes be wrong.
And when they are wrong, it's not fun. I got to be honest with you. But it is stupid to put your head in the sand.
Yeah.
So it is. We prefer the term buy to hold.
Yes. Talk about the intention, which is what buy and hold was always supposed to mean.
Yeah.
But because people want to hijack it and say, literally, this is what it means, therefore, whatever.
Yeah.
We've had to, you know, acquiesce some degree and say, okay, let's be a little clearer in our language. Probably not a bad thing, right? There's no downside to being a little clearer with our terminology.
Well, Buffett gets this one as well, because he says one of his most famous quotes is his favourite holding period is forever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Berkshire will sell something and people go,
Right.
That's not
rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. Ah, you lost money, therefore the rule's stupid.
Yeah, it's just
dumb. It's a way of thinking. It's an approach to investing that works incredibly, incredibly well in all of those examples. Just got to be mindful of how it works.
All right. I'll let you get off that poor, poor nag. Thank you so much again, sir. We made it 35 minutes on not enough sleep and way too much alcohol yesterday.
Quality podcast.
We made it. Remember, you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes.
Number one
the
business
number
podcast
one.
In the country, Triple M's Motley Fool Money.
I'm always reminded of the pride before fall.
Oh, mate, that's why I'm doing it now. Don't worry about it. Next week, I'm not going to mention it next week.
No, don't.
Number 86 next week. I'm not even going to think about mentioning it.
That's right.
But while I've got it, it was true at a point in time, Andrew. They can't take that away from us.
If you'd like
to. We will always have been number one on the 15th of March. 2018, back in the day.
Man, if you would like a little bit of more foolish goodness.
And why wouldn't you?
Where do you go?
Fool.com.
MotleyFool.com.
No. Just fool.com.au. /.
I'm out. Mic drop.
Full if you on. Do like what we're doing.
Oh, sorry, yes. If you do like what we're doing, a big, fat 5-star rating.
Last week you say, we do this all the time, we should change it. People think it's the same thing all the time. We're not good enough.
No.
Give us a 5-star rating. Tell your friends, please. A whole lot of your fellow fools enjoyed it last week. They signed up. Unfortunately for them, this is their first podcast, and that may be enough to see them cancel, which might be why the ratings drop next week. But if you do like it, please tell your friends. Let us know. Give us a line on Twitter. Until next week.
Full on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.